The Blitz. KFNC Mont Belvieu, Houston. A Gau Media station. If you're not down with that, we got two words for you.
Are you ready?
Hey, think you can tell us what to do? You think you can tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters.
Break it down!
This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
In for AJ and Fred, I'm Mike Meltzer, joined by Craig Hoshkin. It is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. The way to get in, as we're at the top of the 5 o'clock hour, 713-780-3776. The Texans right now are sitting at 5-3. They're playing a 4-4 Jaguars team in London on Sunday morning. This is an 8:30 start, so one of those like national TV, get your coffee and eggs and all that kind of stuff ready. This game, people make fun of me when I say like this game scares me. Because I've done that a lot on the radio here in Houston the last 9 years. I mean, I think this will be a competitive football game, and I think the point spread on this one, Craig, is fair. I think it's like 1.5 right now. The Texans are favored. I never know what to do with a London game. The Jaguars play in London every single year, so maybe they have some sort of like advantage as far as like acclimating or knowing what the deal is.
Maybe.
I'm not even sure about that part. I do worry about the matchup because the two Texans tackles, Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard, are both questionable. And the Jaguars have two guys as edge rushers, and Josh Allen and Yannick Ngakoue, that can really get after the quarterback. What is your sense on this game right now?
I think the biggest aspect of this game that I haven't heard a lot of people talking about is the fact that DeAndre Hopkins isn't going to be covered by Jalen Ramsey.
I think that is
massive for the Texans. As far as the tackles go, the offensive line isn't great anyway. All it's going to do is make Deshaun Watson step up in the pocket a split second earlier or roll out a split second earlier.
I actually disagree with you on that. I think when they have these two tackles, I think this is an above-average offensive line.
I think it's about average. I think that it's clearly the best lineup, five guys they can put on the field,
yes,
when those two guys are available.
But we've seen this offensive line with, I got to go back through all the games here, but just top of my head, with Tunsil and Laremy Tunsil at left tackle, Howard at right tackle, then Max Sharping, Nick Martin, Zach Fulton. I think we've seen that in like two games. I think we've seen it in Atlanta and against Kansas City until Howard got hurt. I could be wrong about that. You can text in and let me know if I am on that. I might be off by a game or so. But we haven't seen this combination of them healthy for an extended period. And Craig, I think those five guys are like the five guys they want to roll with moving forward.
I think that largely contributes to the fact that they may be average or slightly below average as a unit because they haven't had time to gel as a five-man unit and play a lot together. Does that mean that I think had they been able to play healthy for the first 8 games, that they wouldn't be much better? Of course, I think they'd be significantly better, but those injuries do impact the ability for that to be a great offensive line or even a good offensive line and give Deshaun Watson more than enough time on a handful of plays. Deshaun Watson is very good at making plays off schedule. He's very good at making plays in spite of the way the offensive line has played at times. He's very good at making plays when he does have time, when they do play better than they have played for large points of the season. So I don't think the level of play from the offensive line is going to greatly impact the game Deshaun Watson has, unless Deshaun Watson has another game where he just can't get rid of the football in a timely manner.
Well, I think they need one of those guys playing. So Tunsil and Howard are both questionable. I think they need one of them to play.
It would definitely be a boost if one or both of them could play. It's going to be better than neither of them playing.
Because to me, like if neither of them play, then you've got huge mismatches
True.
On each end. And then I'm automatically, as Bill O'Brien as the play caller going in, and I'm already like defensive mindset because I don't want to get my quarterback killed. But if I've got Tunsil, and I would prefer that Laramie be in the game as opposed to Howard, because
well, you always want your left tackle, to your starting left tackle, to be the guy that can go. And if it's only Titus Howard, you probably have to slide him over to left tackle and let him play there.
And that always scares me, especially with this crew.
Yeah,
with these guys, they're moving these guys around like the musical chairs.
The other thing I don't love, especially if they're playing at a percentage less than 100%, is playing this in Wembley Stadium in London. That's a soccer field where the grass is cut a little differently, and it's not what you're used to playing on.
That's fair.
As a surface, as you would in the United States.
How important is this game for Houston? They're 5-3, and if you don't know the upcoming schedule, I'll just give it to you real quick. So this is the last game before the bye, which is important with the injuries. So Jaguars Sunday in London, then it goes at Baltimore, home Indianapolis on a Thursday night, home Patriots. 5-3, bye, those three games. How important is this game?
I think it's, in the context of the schedule, it's very important because I think with that, with Baltimore, New England, the Colts, and the Jaguars being the four games, as well as the bye, you got to go 2-4 during that time to keep everything going the way it is. Now, luckily for the Texans, if you look at the rest of the AFC, the other divisions in the AFC is one clear good team, and then everyone else is kind of pretty far behind the pack. Except in the AFC West, the Raiders could potentially still make some noise. But even at 3-4, there's nothing special. The Steelers aren't going to do anything special. The Browns are a joke. So we're still looking at a situation where it's likely the two wild card teams come from the AFC South.
I would agree. The one team that worries me, though, would be Buffalo.
I overlooked Buffalo. That's
so,
on me.
No, that's okay. I think you have a point in the sense of, all right, if you're breaking down the playoff picture halfway through the season, I think that the heavy, heavy, heavy odds are that there will be at least one wild card team coming from the AFC South because the North stinks and the AFC West isn't very good either. Yeah. And I think Buffalo is that only other team. Like, you look at it, you would have to have a big run from Pittsburgh with a backup quarterback, or Cleveland with what they have going on. You would have to have a big run from the Raiders or the Chargers, the most likely team, to even really threaten for the wild card.
The Cleveland Browns are done. I wouldn't even put them in that conversation. Okay. But yeah, the Steelers are not likely to come out on fire. The Chargers, as inconsistent as they are, no chance. The Raiders, I still don't see it, but they are playing above what I thought they would be at this point in the season.
Gruden's done a nice job so far.
He has done a nice job. But I think especially if you want to win the division and get a home playoff game, this game is massively important.
For me, here's where I'm at on this game, Texans-Jaguars. If the Texans have any hope of getting a bye in the AFC playoffs, which I know you have doubts about, and I do too, but if they have any hopes of doing that, they have to win Sunday against Jacksonville. They got to get that sixth win considering who they have upcoming. If they just want to make the playoffs, I think they can afford to lose this game and still win the division. If you want a bye in the AFC playoffs, the Texans absolutely need to win this game on Sunday because you've got Baltimore, Indianapolis, and New England up next. They have to win this game if they want a bye. Have to.
You're 100%. I mean, I think at worst to get a bye, you have to be 12-4 at the end of the season with the way the Ravens and the Patriots are playing.
You think Baltimore's going getting to 12?
I think it's very possible that they get that without knowing what their schedule is like down the stretch in the last half. I think it's very possible they get to 12. 11-5 maybe, but at 11-5, I think that game at Baltimore becomes your tiebreaker to see who gets the home playoff game.
Not to bore people, but just real quick on the Baltimore schedule, they still have to play. They have to play New England, Houston, at the Rams, 49ers, at the Bills. I think it'll be tough for them to get
the 12. They could lose three of those games for sure.
Yeah.
But that being, like I said, at 11-5, if the Texans were to win the division, that means that Baltimore-Texans game at Baltimore in a few weeks becomes your tiebreaker for who gets the home playoff game.
Yeah. I mean, those next two games are going to be huge. They're all obviously big games. I mean, this is the NFL, right? But Baltimore and Indy are the two teams you're competing with like directly for playoff spots, for buys, for home field advantage, all that kind of stuff. And also, you got to keep an eye on, as far as like, what's it going to take to get the bye in the AFC, and is it going to be 12 wins or 11? Kansas City playing Minnesota this weekend. I don't think is Mahomes going to play in this game. I don't think he's,
I wouldn't if I were there, and I don't think he's going to play.
And if he doesn't play, then I don't think they're going to win this game this weekend, Kansas City. And then they're all of a sudden 5-4, and so they would have to run the table to get to 12.
Yeah, no, that's a good point on that too. And another one, if at 11-5 tie with the Texans, Texans do get the tiebreaker there. They've already beaten Kansas City. So that's
we confused everybody? Does this all make sense?
I hope so. I hope the math this is a calculus problem.
Yeah.
I'm having business calculus flashbacks all over again.
I feel like it makes sense in my mind, but I feel like if you're driving, you're like, what are Craig and Mike saying right now? Bottom line this. For me, Texans, Jaguars, if they want to get a bye in the AFC, they got to win this game. If they just want to make the playoffs, they don't absolutely have to win this game. That is where I'm at on this game.
I think you're 100% correct about that. As far as the other part, to get a bye, you're going to have to win the division. Look at the Colts' last four games of the season. At the Buccaneers, at the Saints is tough, at home against the Colts, and at the Jaguars. There's three on the road and only one game at home, but three games against teams that could ultimately already be eliminated from the playoffs and thus not playing for much.
Bucks, Saints, Panthers, Jaguars. Yeah, I mean,
so I think they have an easier stretch than the Texans do.
I think that's fair. I think the Colts have a better roster and a better coach than Houston does, but what they do not have is a better quarterback.
No, they don't. I mean, Deshaun Watson is, like you said, he's a top five MVP candidate to this point in the season, and he is a guy capable of carrying this Texans team to 12-4, 11-5.
I think he
but is. To get to either of those numbers, I think you have to win this week.
We agree on that. They got to win on Sunday in London.
Yes, absolutely. And that spread scares me too.
Why does it scare you? I feel like Vegas doesn't know what they're
doing. It's a weird number. 713-780-3776. You want to join us as we move along. This is The Blitz.
Listening to The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
Welcome back into The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Craig Koshkin, Mike Meltzer sitting in for Fred and A.J. as they are in London. Talked a lot of football in the first hour, a lot of baseball, got through the Astros and everyone's Houston-based depression. If you want to be further depressed, Colin McHugh actually just put out a string of tweets thanking the city of Houston.
Really nice tweets,
but they might make you a little more sad for how things turned out this year.
Because he's a free agent.
He is a free agent, and he may not. Those tweets read, Aaron mentioned this in the break, they read as if someone who might have been told the writing's on the wall.
Yeah, I think that's someone who knows that he's probably not going to get the kind of offer he wants or any offer maybe at all to come back to the Astros.
Yeah, and he was very thankful for the city and giving him a chance and all the how he's become attached to the city. So great tweets from him. But in the last segment, we were kind of talking about the Texans as they approach the playoffs, and someone wants to join in and call. James wants to talk Broncos. James, welcome into the Blitz.
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing, man?
Oh, good, man. Look, I know my Broncos are not a playoff team, but do you think Vic Fangio comes back? And, like, what happened to us this season? Was it Joe Flacco? Was it just the new offense and the new defense? Like, I mean, because I didn't expect us to go to the playoffs. I thought we'd be a 7-9 team because we were learning all of the, you know, new offense, new defense. But, I mean, it just blew up in our faces. And does John Elway and Vic Fangio both come back next year, or do we go a different direction?
John Elway seems to be Teflon in Denver. I mean, bad move after bad move after bad move. And let's be honest, even signing Peyton Manning, despite the fact they won a Super Bowl, wasn't some game-changing move on offense for the Denver Broncos. It wasn't they won because of their defense. They won because Von Miller was incredible early in his career. He's still incredible.
Well, to be fair, so signing Peyton Manning got them out of the Tebow disaster because he was winning games, but it was unsustainable.
Sure.
And Peyton was great for the first couple of years, but then he kind of died, and then the defense picked up the slack.
During the Super Bowl year, it was clear he was at the end of his run.
It
was beyond clear. I mean, Brock Osweiler got a contract because of how he played during that 7-game stretch.
Yes, and he was fine.
But as far as this year's concerned, I think, one, you got Flacco'd. I mean, that Joe Flacco has made a career off one incredible run to his credit. He bet on himself.
Yep.
He won, got a huge contract. But other than that, has been a largely average quarterback in the NFL. And he was never going to be the guy that took the Broncos from team with a good defense to good team all around.
Well, here's what they are. And I think James brings up a good question, because if we're talking about like the NFL as a whole, I think the Broncos are interesting. They don't have a quarterback. They are what the Texans were under Bill O'Brien before they got Deshaun, except they've gotten unlucky. Like James mentioned, I thought we'd be 7-9. Well, you're 2-6, and you should be 4-4. They lost that bizarre game to the Bears, where the officials probably screwed them on the 1 second.
Yep.
And then they screw up on Sunday against the Colts, where they have
three losses by a field goal.
Yeah.
Like, by a last-second field goal.
They're basically a .500 team that isn't that good, that has been a little bit unlucky, and doesn't have a quarterback. Like, that is who they are. That's who they've been for the last couple of years. Like, Fangio, I have no idea if he's worth it as a coach, but they can't fire him now, because they just fired Vance Joseph last year.
Yeah, going to one-and-done coaches at that point, I don't think you can really get back. Who's going to want to interview for the position in that case?
Was Vance one-and-done, or was he there for 2 years?
Was he there for 2 years?
I'm going to double-check.
I feel like he was there for 1 year. But
2-and-done. 5-11, 6-10. Yeah, I mean, you got to have to find a quarterback. Like, if you need to have a quarterback in the NFL, not breaking news. And if you don't have a quarterback, then you need to have a really strong overall team. They don't.
And a big problem with the Broncos is they've been just good enough to be on the outside looking in every year in the draft to draft the right quarterback.
Yes.
That's the other side of it. You have to have a top 7 pick to get an elite quarterback, or what is perceived to be elite typically. I mean, obviously there are years when Dak Prescott goes in the 3rd round, Tom Brady in the 6th round. We know all about that. But typically, if you want to get one of the top end guys, it's got to be a top 7 or 8 pick. And the Broncos are typically picking in the 12 to 18 range.
They took Bradley Chubb, who's out for the season, but is a great player, or a really good player. And they took him, quote unquote, over Lamar Jackson. What do you think about that?
I was not high on Lamar Jackson coming out. I'm still not super high on him, despite him being successful in the way John Harbaugh has tailored the offense to him.
It's weird because the Baltimore Ravens passed on Lamar Jackson. Literally, they drafted Hayden Hurst over Lamar Jackson. I'm not like what I'm saying that like I'm not trying to say something weird. Like, the Baltimore Ravens also passed on Lamar Jackson
and then went back and.
And
you can say rectified their mistake, or however you want to phrase it. That's a good point, too. I don't think they took him over. I don't think they passed on Lamar Jackson. I think they made the right pick. Nick Chubb has been good when healthy.
Bradley Chubb. And Nick Chubb's been good, too.
Nick Chubb has been good. I was thinking of my fantasy team. Sorry.
Fair.
Bradley Chubb has been good when healthy. But until they rectify this mistake, and they're going to have to find a way to trade up in the draft if they want to draft somebody.
Yeah, they got to find a quarterback.
They have to find a quarterback, and they've got to get better at the skill positions. They're not great at wide receiver. They traded away Emmanuel Sanders now, who has 4 touchdowns in 2 games with Jimmy Garoppolo. And they don't have, I mean, Philip Lindsay is their best offensive player. Is that
Yeah, I would say so, unless Noah Fant becomes pretty good, which may or may not happen.
But if that's who we're talking about as your two best offensive players,
it's not.
You've just got to get better all around on offense.
I agree.
In addition to finding that quarterback. So
they drafted a bad left tackle in Garrett Bowles. I want to get to this, though. Mike Meltzer, Craig Koshkin in for AJ and Fred here on the Blitz on ESPN 97.5. I know you want to talk about Earl Campbell and his bizarre comments. Oof. So I will let you lay that story out, because I'm very curious to see what the audience thinks about this.
Well, so if you missed it, Earl Campbell, and I'm paraphrasing, it was a much longer answer to this, but essentially said the problems with Texas football is you in today's college game, you need a black quarterback to be able to do things when the game breaks down or the play breaks down to be successful. And one, I think that's a a horrible thing for Earl Campbell to say. And the second really racist thing said about the state of Texas football in the last 4 or 5 years. We had Red McCombs talking when Charlie Strong was hired about how he's really only good enough to be a position coach and not good enough to be a head coach, especially in a place. And that was awful and horrible to say as well. But when it comes, I think it's a spit in the face to the guy right now, Sam Ellinger at Texas, who is third all time in touchdowns at Texas.
I don't watch UT football as closely as you do, Craig, but watching UT football the way I consume it, which is more of like as a big college football fan, but more of a casual UT observer, the problem is the defense. It's not good, and they have too many injuries.
That's like they're 117th in the nation in total defense. I mean, that's they're 130th out of 130 in punt returns. They have negative punt return yardage. They're just not a overall well-coached football team. And that starts with Tom Herman, and it's also on the coordinators. And yes, they have 22 scholarship athletes that have been injured for some, if not all, the season this year.
It's a big number.
It's a big number. You know what? TCU had 40 scholarship athletes miss time last year.
See that is what would kill me as a Texas fan. I can't. You can justify losing to Oklahoma and losing to LSU, especially the way they
by a touchdown each.
Absolutely. Close games. You can't lose to TCU.
No, I completely agree with you. That game, if you are Tom Herman, but if you follow Tom Herman's career, he has been really good, even back to U of H, of getting up for the big games.
Yep.
He's also had one major letdown in the preparation department in small games every single year. Last year, it was an unranked Oklahoma State team that only won 5 games and a Maryland team to start the season, although that Maryland team had something to play for with the passing of a teammate in summer workout. Either way, you can't lose that game to Maryland, neither did Tom Herman. When it was U of H on an undefeated season, you lose to UConn on the road, who was horrible. The very next year, the Tom Herman to LSU rumors start swirling, and you lose to SMU in a game you have no business losing to SMU. And I believe they got shelled by SMU that year. I'm not quite sure what the final score was. And then at Texas, he's done it every year. So it's not surprising that they played a game they should have won, but Vegas saw that game being close to. That was only a 1.5-point spread.
Well, here's what I'm interested in with this story, with Earl Campbell. So here's the quote. Until the University of Texas realizes you have to have a black quarterback, and nothing against Ellinger, you got to have a talented black quarterback. All these schools that are winning, even in the pros, you have black quarterbacks. When guys are not open, something can still happen. So the big lead says, why isn't more being made of Earl Campbell's comment about white quarterbacks? My question is, what more can I make about it? What can I say?
No, I mean, it tells its own story.
Yeah, like, what am I supposed to say?
It's a bad look for anyone associated with the University of
and
Texas.
And not to cast aspersions, like, I don't know if Earl is completely with it at this point either. Like, I don't know. 713-780-ESPN is the phone number. He's Craig Koshkin. I'm Mike Meltzer. So we can keep talking about Earl Campbell later in the hour, the Zadik Jewelers gem of the day. Am I wrong for still being annoyed at Garrett Cole? We'll discuss on the Blitz.
This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
Mike Meltzer, Craig Koshkin in here at the bottom of the 5 o'clock hour on a Friday afternoon. Fred and A.J. are off in London before the Texans-Jaguars game, 8:30 a.m. Central time start on Sunday morning. In a moment, why I'm still a little bit annoyed by Garrett Cole and the way he reacted to the Game 7 loss the other night. We've been talking a little bit about Earl Campbell, who said, quote, until the University of Texas realizes you have to have a black quarterback, and nothing against Sam Ellinger, but you got to have a talented black quarterback. All these schools that are winning, even the pros, have black quarterbacks. That's what Earl Campbell said. The big lead asks, why is the media not doing more with this story? My question is, what the hell am I supposed to do with this story? Like, it's a ridiculous quote.
Fair question.
I don't know if Earl Campbell is completely with it, which is not like a personal shot or anything. It's just, you know, when you consider the hits that he's taken and the way that he's looked physically the last 5, 10, 15
years.
And
what we know about football players late in their lives through CTE and all the studies that have been done recently. Yep. I mean, it's not a crazy speculation to throw out there.
Let's go to the phones on this. On the HR&P listener line, 713-780-ESPN, David on the Blitz. Hello, David.
Hello, how are you gentlemen doing? I hope everything's going well.
Indeed.
I'm sure what Earl meant to say, they need a more athletic quarterback.
Which is kind of ironic, given who they have.
Yeah,
well,
like, you know, like Sam Ehlinger can run. That dude's a monster. He can bowl people over.
Listen, you know, Earl Campbell knows more, has forgotten more about football than I care to know. And he's a Heisman Trophy winner, and I think he just sees him. I just think he made a mistake and said the wrong thing. And, yes, it's racist, but, you know, if you flip the coin for 40 or 50 years, the same, you know, if you flip the script, same thing was said about black quarterbacks. They weren't smart enough. But that's not an excuse. The point being is I'm willing to bet a dime to a dollar that he meant they need more of an athletic quarterback. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, Dave.
And you may be right. That may be what he meant. And, again, if that is what he meant, it's fair to call him how with it he is. And
given that it doesn't apply.
It just doesn't really apply. That's where I'm going. But word selection matters. And
yeah.
Earl Campbell has been around long enough to know that his words carry weight. So what he said is, and I know you're not making an excuse for him, David. You're just pointing out what he probably meant to say. But as Mike pointed out, it doesn't really apply. Now, is Sam Ehlinger athletic in the same way Jalen Hurts is, that he's going to make a bunch of people miss in the open field? No, but he's going to run over you in the open field.
He's a little bit more like Tebow in that way than
he's
someone.
A lot like Cam Newton ran around. Cam Newton also would run people. Now, Cam Newton was also elusive to the corner, to the edge as well. But he's like any other big quarterback that could run in that he's going to bowl you. And no one would tell you that Tim Tebow wasn't athletic as a quarterback. In fact, the fact that he was athletic would be the reason most people would say he got any chance in the NFL to begin with.
Yeah, and I think that's totally fair. I did not like what Gerrit Cole did on Wednesday after Game 7, saying before he met with the media that he was technically unemployed. Does he have to do the media session? Technically, I'm unemployed. Then talk about how he was a representative of himself. Listen, I have no issue with Gerrit Cole leaving Houston and getting as much money as possible. I have no issue with that whatsoever. He has been a great pitcher this season. And he was great in the playoffs, minus game one in the World Series, obviously. But that rubbed me the wrong way. Now, I'm not going to like hold it against him moving forward. I'm not going to like hold a grudge against him, Craig. But honestly, that did bother me, considering the fact that, like Charlie Morton, like a lot of guys who have come in here, the Astros organization did a lot for Gerrit Cole, and I just did not appreciate that reaction on Wednesday night.
My big problem with it, because technically what he said was factual. He was no longer an employee of the Astros. He was a free agent. All this stuff. Fine. I can take that literally and be somewhat okay with it. He had the Scott Boras hat on, and for him to have that means, as he packed his stuff to go to the stadium for Game 7 that day, and likely for Game 6, he probably had it on him as well because that was a potential clincher. And who knows if he would have worn it had they won the game. But so he had to consciously know that line of speaking was something he could, was an option for him to approach the entire situation. Because he packed that hat, he had to be pre-thinking about that line of talking. And that is a really negative mentality to have as you approach the clubhouse to try and win a World Series.
So in the story, there's a story in the Chronicle today, Craig, that apparently Gerrit Cole, he said he's been wearing the hat for 3 months, mostly on days he started as a good luck charm. I haven't seen it. I don't know if you've seen it. I have not seen it. Now, maybe I've missed it, and if so, then I'm wrong. I have not seen Gerrit Cole wear the Boras Corporation hat.
But guess what? This isn't that situation either. This isn't a day he started that he wore it as a good luck charm.
Yes.
This is after you had lost the World Series, wearing it and talking about not being a part of the Astros organization. The looks are completely different.
Yes. And to me, the biggest thing is, like, a lot of times we get frustrated with Houston's sports franchise. We're like, are they doing the right thing? Is the coaching good? Are they developing the players? Well, this is a guy who they took who, listen, Gerrit Cole is great because he's Gerrit Cole and he's always been super talented. But this is also a guy who was basically a mediocre pitcher his last, 2 years in Pittsburgh. They took him and they helped transform him into the best pitcher in Major League Baseball. And even though you can be frustrated about Game 7 and your usage, and I understand that, and I can sympathize and I can empathize with that, like, this organization did a lot for you. Like, you were not even close to this point 2 years ago. They won the World Series 2 years ago. You were not anywhere close.
Yeah, the least you could do is answer some possibly uncomfortable questions about your future with an Astros hat on and with a general sense of correctness, athletic correctness in the way you answer questions. Give me the Bill Belichick nothing sound. Don't give me, I'm not an employee of the Astros. I'm me now. I represent Gerrit Cole. And, oh, look at my hat. Scott Boras is my agent.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
No, I
did not like it.
It is completely fair to be rubbed absolutely the wrong way. I like your approach that you're not going to hold it against him regardless of where he signs in the offseason.
Awesome.
It's a be angry in the moment type situation.
Yes.
And look back at the moment and say, what were you thinking? But anyone who, if he is an angel next year, when he comes to Minute Maid Park the 8 or 9 times that he's here and the two or three times that he pitches, if you are going to boo him for that, you are overlooking the overall contribution he made despite not winning a championship this year.
Agreed. And to clarify my take, like, if I'm a fan at, like, I'm going to go ahead, I'm not going to assume he's going to sign with the Angels, but I think it's going to be with one of those teams. Like, hopefully it's a National League team, but I think it will be an American League team. And I think we'll see him here next season pitching at Minute Maid Park. And if and when Gerrit Cole pitches, I absolutely think he deserves a standing ovation.
Without a doubt. And I think he'll get it, too.
And I think he will get it, yes. But my point is, like, it wasn't the main thing that bothered me on Wednesday. The main thing was losing a championship, losing a World Series.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, but this did not sit well with me just with the knowledge of this is, like, a really clear-cut situation that they traded for you. You came to this team, and while you deserve all the credit for helping yourself and getting better and listening to what they said, like, this organization clearly was a huge, like, the city and the organization was a huge benefit to the professional career and the life of Gerrit Cole.
Oh, I completely agree. And as Gerrit Cole moves on, the things that will continue to make him be great are the things he learned from this staff in Houston. And if he were to take a small step, his stuff is too electric to take a big step back. But if he were to take a small step back, it's going to largely be the absence of that front office, that coaching staff, and what they provided him with on a day-to-day basis, or a start-to-start basis in his case, that made him the probable Cy Young winner in 2019.
Yep. And I also acknowledge that I thought Cole's statement on Thursday where he thanked the fans, the city, and the Astros, I thought it was a classy statement. So I did like him doing that after what happened on Wednesday.
To me, it was enough. I mean, he said exactly what needed to be said to kind of quell the thirst for vengeance from Houston Astros fans. And even that, I thought the response to it was pretty well under control.
It was, yeah.
For what I've seen Astros Twitter do in certain situations.
That's a very good point. People did not say, like, I felt like I was angrier than most people, and that's not usually a place I find myself.
That's
especially when it comes to Astros Twitter.
Astros and Rockets Twitter can be very vocally, like, annoyed and outraged over some very minor things.
Yeah, a lot of people in the ALCS are like, I never want to see Yordan Alvarez again. And I'm sitting here like, nope, keep throwing him out there in the lineup every single day.
Yep.
So I'm more of that kind of guy.
Yep. Well, as we hit the break, as we come back, we're going to get to the Zadok Jewelers Gym of the Day. Thank you for tuning in. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. But she won't sing this song if she needs orderly. We still pity the men I know. So you're a tough guy, like you're really rough guy. Just can't get enough guy.
listening to The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
Fred and A.J. are enjoying the high life in London. Craig Koshkin and Mike Meltzer filling in on a Friday afternoon. Hope your drive home is going well. Hope you haven't hit too much traffic. It's Houston. You're bound to hit some. Do you deal with much traffic around the state? I mean, you live in Midtown.
I do.
I live about 2 miles west of here.
Okay, so you're in a good spot.
Yep.
I commute right now usually from Midtown to downtown. So I would say the roughest, like, it's not far. It's a mile. But, like, it'll take me about probably 20 to 25 minutes to actually walk into my office from Midtown. Just between, like, just all the cars, parking the parking garage, going through the tunnels.
Get the elevator.
Yeah, all that. Yeah.
But the general part in your car is not even that long.
It's not that long. It's like it's longer than it should be based on the downtown. Like,
sure.
Can I tell you my annoyance?
Go, please.
My annoyance is making the decision of when to get into the right lane, the bus lane. That is like my vexing decision. Because I'm like, I know I need to make a right turn eventually to get into my parking garage, but I'm not sure when to do it because I'm going to be either stuck behind a bus or some idiot car that's stalled there for some unknown reason.
Or that's just stopped at the red light, not turning right for
exactly.
some reason. That's,
yes.
That's is the worst. When you're not turning right in the right lane
yep.
during high traffic times downtown, basically rush hour morning or night. Those people just – I used to work downtown, so yeah. I feel your pain on that. I know exactly what you mean.
But compared to all major life issues, losing a World Series Game 7 and dealing with that, like it's not that bad.
No, compared to what a lot of people in the city deal with,
absolutely.
you've got it very light on the traffic front. Well, it's that time, everybody. Let's get to the Zadak Jewelers Gem of the Day.
The Gem of the Day. It's the Gem of the Day. The Zadok Jeweler Gem of the Day.
Mike, I don't know if you saw this, but apparently Chick-fil-A, which is really good at marketing, for the record.
Yes.
Sent out an email reminding that its fans and restaurant patrons that Chicken Sandwich Day, National Chicken Sandwich Day, was coming up. Unfortunately, National Chicken Sandwich Day happens to be on November 3rd. Do you know what day of the week November 3rd is, considering today is November 1st?
So that would be Sunday.
Do you know of any Chick-fil-A's that are open on Sunday?
I do not.
So Chick-fil-A reminded its patrons that it is National Chicken Sandwich Day on a day that they are not open for business, even in the Mercedes-Benz Dome in Atlanta. If there were a home game in Atlanta, that wouldn't be open either.
Yes.
Not wise, guys.
Not perfect drop-in. But to even top that off, even better, Popeyes one-ups them by bringing back their chicken sandwich on November 3rd.
They finally got their supply chain figured out.
They finally got their supply. We don't even know if that's the case. They may not be able to keep up still. But they're bringing it back on a day that Chick-fil-A is reminding its patrons, go eat a chicken sandwich, just not with us.
So the weird part to me is that, see, I would figure, I'm fortunate enough, I happen to have the Chick-fil-A black card this year, which is good. So I can go to the ones in Houston and get a free meal, which I have done, and they're great.
That's a great thing to have.
It's a great thing to have, yes. I'm fortunate. So the weird thing to me is I figure, like, if I'm working at Chick-fil-A in public relations, I would think that, like, if there's any date that I need to promote, like anything involving a date, that I would always need to cross-reference that date with Sunday.
Absolutely.
Like, because I know that my business isn't open on those days.
I'm in marketing. I've sent out a bunch of mass emails. That's,
so you
that's
know.
What I do. I get it. That is a mistake that Chick-fil-A just can't make. Like, that is like, the worst thing I ever did was on Memorial Day, I thanked people who paid the ultimate price and served for our country and existing servicemen and women. Like, Memorial Day is just for people who passed.
Yes.
So, and that's a mistake, but at least it's a positive mistake. Like,
yeah,
I'm still thanking people for their service for the country.
You thank too many people.
Exactly.
That was your mistake.
Here, Chick-fil-A literally is promoting a day where they cannot generate any revenue.
I actually somehow, I got in early on the whole Popeye's chicken sandwich. I went on vacation in early August, the Turks and Caicos. And I came back and I was like, you know, looking for jobs and all that kind of stuff. So I had more time on my hands. And I happened to see on Twitter that people were talking about this Popeye's chicken sandwich. So on a random Friday, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go to the one down by U of H. And this is when, this is like before it really blew up. This is like when some people saw it on social media, but before they like really knew. So I got in and I got the chicken sandwich before like people couldn't get it at all.
And I'm the same way. I actually got it in like April when it first came out.
Oh, so you were really
someone had it and was like, hey, it's really good. You need to go try it. And I was like, okay, I'll go. It's Popeyes. Why would I not try Popeyes?
You were like the Lewis and Clark.
Well, actually, there's a really good reason why I wouldn't try Popeyes, but I might tease that for the next. There's a family reason why I might not, but I love Popeyes. That is your Zadok Jewelers gem of the day.
The gem of the day. It's the gem of the day. The Zadok Jeweler gem of the day.
I'll go ahead and get into it with my Popeye story. So my grandfather on my dad's side, who passed away before I was born, so I never knew him, he was one of the original founders of Popeye's Chicken.
Interesting.
One of the original five guys who started Popeye's Chicken. Unfortunately, they had two stores in New Orleans, and Al Copeland, who now he's sold it and bought it back a few times, but still owns it to the now owns it again. They wanted to expand, and in order to do that, they had to take personal loans out from the bank. Everyone had to do it to be able to finance with how they wanted to expand. My grandfather, being a Jewish man who is a little weary of banks and the federal government at the time for the way Jews were treated, and even in the United States during World War II and all that stuff, decided that it wasn't for him, and he decided to sell out when they only had two stores.
Ooh, so that's why.
Ooh. So growing up, my dad was so bitter.
Yeah.
I didn't have Popeye's chicken until I was 17. We would not have it. He would not allow it in the house.
Those stories are the ones that always kill me, right? Like when someone comes close to a big fortune.
Oh, yeah. I have no complaints with the way my life has turned out, but that's just a whole other level that you can't even fathom.
Yeah.
Unless you happen to be lucky enough to be the one in it.
It's like the guy, you know, that guy who sold his Apple stock, right?
Yeah.
Whatever his name is. But he has actually said that he was better off selling the stock, even though he would have made, I think, like billions and billions of dollars. He felt like, whatever, what is it, Ronald Wayne or something along those lines.
Well, I mean, there's a million, the guy who started Victoria's Secret.
What did he do?
He sold it to the group that owns the Limited, that brand,
the Limited,
for like $4 million.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And then like 10 or 5 years later, it was worth like $500 million.
Yes.
And it's just like, wow. I mean, like just the what ifs.
But you don't feel bad about it, so that's
no. I mean, Popeye's is delicious. I'm not gonna rob myself of that.
Yeah.
Is it better? Is the Popeye's chicken sandwich better than the Chick-fil-A chicken sandwich?
I always struggle with food comparisons I'll tell you why. Because for me, it's always like, what am I exactly in the mood for? I know people, especially in Texas, they're like big on this like In-N-Out versus Whataburger thing, and I always feel like I enjoy both, but it depends on like what kind of mood I am in for, like what kind of hamburger I want. Not that there's an In-N-Out in Houston, but just like if there hypothetically was, for me, it would depend on like what I am in the mood for. Like sometimes I'd rather have a different example, like a hamburger over like a nice steak or vice versa.
Yeah, sure.
So it's hard for me to say like what is better than the other. It just depends on how I'm feeling that day, what I want.
That's fair. For the record, In-N-Out is a really good burger, but it's a plain burger. That's the downfall for me, where Whataburger is better is it's just more customizable. There's more options to it, all that type of stuff.
That's
where Whataburger shines, that In-N-Out is the same burger every single time, whereas I can get something completely different on the Whataburger menu every time I go.
It's
always going to be good.
It's a more versatile menu.
Without a doubt.
Okay.
So, but In-N-Out's good. It's just not better than Whataburger. It is what it is.
He's Craig Koshkin. I'm Mike Meltzer. We're in for Fred and AJ, who are over in London. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to give you the biggest things that we are looking for during this NFL weekend, the most important games and storylines. Week number 9 next on The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.